Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. www.thematthewaronshow.com. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. MATTAARON Show on Twitter. You can find us on Stitch. You could find us on right here at blogtalkradio.com. But the best place to find us is always www.thematthewaronshow.com. We have a big show today, a great show today. Lee Wannell and Logan Marshall Green join us from the film Upgrade. I saw the film Upgrade. I think it is one of the best films of the year. I think if you liked Terminator, if you liked RoboCop, if you liked, what's another film I'd say is right in that wheelhouse there? Total Recall. Now, those three films, I'm saying not only if you liked them, They're like right up there with them. This isn't like it's kind of like those. No, it's as good as those, and you should check it out. It is one of the best films I've seen all year. I enjoyed it immensely. My friend Drew and I went to go see it, and we didn't know what to expect, and we didn't see any trailers, nothing. We just said we're gonna go into this cold, and oh my God, we were blown away. It's a little violent, a little gory in places, but for the most part, just a great story with some good action and really, really enjoyable stuff, man. And I have an interview with Lee and Logan on this show today, because after I did the after I saw the movie, I told Pat, my producer, Tobias, I said, I got to interview these guys. I got to talk to them about this movie. So it wasn't a situation of we had the interview and then I went to see the movie. No, I demanded the interview after seeing the movie. That's how much I like this movie. I'm trying to think off the top of my head if I've even seen a better film this year. And it's hard, man. It's not as of right now. No, I loved Upgrade. Upgrade is a... You know, I really like Solo. Solo was good. I don't know if Solo for me is the best film of the year, though, and I loved Avengers. Avengers was good. I don't know if Avengers was the best film of the year for me, though. Upgrade is up there right now. So please sit back and enjoy my interview with Logan Marshall Green and Lee Wannell. It's coming up right now. Okay, it's Matthew Aaron, and I am here. I promised everyone that my summer in L.A., I would do some live interviews, and I'm here with someone returning to our program, Lee Wannell, and is that right, Wannell? Wannell. You, Wannell?
But you, what
I
you
like said, how you did, though. That's classy.
What you said is what teachers called me.
Yeah? Oh, that's great.
Substitute teachers. Always.
That's the reputation I wanted to have, like your teacher. And Logan Marshall Green, who... By the way, I want to tell you, my favorite thing in Prometheus was your performance. I thought you were outstanding.
Thank you.
I thought you were outstanding. So I've been excited to talk about this because I saw it a week ago, and it's my favorite movie of the year so far.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I love this movie. I loved it. I almost didn't even need to read these. I told Holly, I'm talking about the production notes. I'm like, I don't really need them because I know exactly where this is headed.
What did you think before reading the notes? What was it?
Okay, so when I saw the film, and we'll talk about that too, I want to talk about how the whole process of this film, because I just find this to be, it's great to see original filmmaking. You know, there's no IP to this. There's no, you know, this is just a straight up, I want to make a sci-fi action movie. Like Terminator was the total feel I got from this movie. And I tell people, it's going to affect you like it did for me when I was a teenager and I saw Terminator for the first time. I really believe that. Low budget, but not low budget. Like, it looks amazing, just like Terminator. Yeah. People don't really know this about Terminator, but it was like a $5 million movie.
100%.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was the CGI of that movie. He was the special effects. And that's kind of what you did with this movie. But you guys created this entire world, and my friend and I saw this, and we both walked away, and he's a big comic book geek, and we walked away, and we were so jacked because this world was so detailed.
Like, it's insane that this only took 4 months from start to finish. And we're not going to talk about, I mean, we will talk about, but, like, obviously from inception to finish, right. Not 4 months. But just the detail you put into this film, it's gorgeous, man. I wanted to congratulate you guys first. I think it's really a great, great movie. Great
Thank
movie.
You so much for saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Thanks,
man. You definitely hit the nail on the head in terms of the influences production-wise. That first Terminator movie, apart from just being a great movie
yeah.
and a near-perfect screenplay, I still read that screenplay to this day just to get a refresher course in that economical, beautiful writing. I think the best exposition I've ever seen is in the Terminator. You know, when they're driving and he gives all the information, but you don't even notice because
yeah.
they're right in the middle of a car chase. I mean, it's. I don't feel like that screenplay is given enough credit.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yeah.
Who wrote the Terminator?
James Cameron.
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah, he wrote it. He had made, like, Piranha 2,
mm-hmm.
some sort of bad sequel in Italy, and it was a terrible experience, and then he wrote The Terminator and as you were saying, you go back and watch it, you study it, it is a low budget movie. It's Arnie is the special effect. Your
right.
imagination does half the work in imagining a robot and how it moves. And so that's what I wanted to do with this, is make one of those movies in that spirit. You know, films that are coming out now, tentpole movies, and I love them. I love to go and see them, but they're getting more and more bloated, more and more busy, 3 hours long, and it's just constant movement,
sure.
smashing. I kind of wanted to strip everything back and make a sci-fi film like the ones I grew up with in the 80s, in the VHS.
I think you did that. Yeah, there's RoboCop in this.
It's like
Verhoeven,
Cronenberg.
Yeah, tons of Verhoeven and Cronenberg. Yeah, I loved it. And, you know, I wanted to bring up, and we'll get back to the inception of the whole project, but Logan's casting, because what's interesting to me is we brought up Terminator, and originally James Cameron wanted O.J. Simpson. And I
right.
sat down with Mike Medavoy, and Mike Medavoy told me he had to convince him to go with Arnold. He didn't want Arnold. Now, how was the casting process? Because imagine how different of a movie that is. Well, now that we know what we know now, but with OJ, right?
Yes.
So you have to get the casting right. It's got to be, boom, it's got to be the best. And Logan kills this, but how'd you know he was going to kill it?
Well, the truth is I didn't. And I'll let Logan elaborate. I had seen Logan, I've seen him in a lot of stuff, but I had seen him in a film called The Invitation, and I loved that movie.
It's a great movie.
And it's such a chamber piece. All these character actors just doing beautiful work, and it's subtle, but it's so tense. And Logan in that film, you know, he's lost a child, he's carrying all this grief on his shoulders. So I knew he was a great actor, but I didn't know that he would handle the physical stuff of the role so well. Sometimes when you're making a movie like this, you have to just jump off the cliff and go, okay, let's do it. And then when we talked, you know, I was like, you know, you do that thing where you're feeling each other out, like, am I making a mistake? And as soon as we talked in my kitchen one day, I was like, this is the right choice.
Was there an audition process, or was there a casting director sent you a list of names? You're looking at a list of names. Like, how'd you circle Logan, and how'd you even get to, like, come on over, let's talk and see if this is right?
Well, it was getting late in the game, and we had a few names on the list, and then, I don't know, nothing was really exciting me. And then I said to Jason Blum one day, Logan Marshall Green, and in his style, he was like, give me a minute. It was like 1930s Hollywood, like, get me Logan Marshall Green's agent. And so all of a sudden it was happening. But I mean, how was it from your end?
That's what I was going to ask, because it's probably a different story that way, right?
I mean, really, it was a mutual friend I think had heard whispers and was quick to make sure that I read it. Because, you know, sometimes when I was working a job at the moment, so you kind of, I certainly can't be asked to read scripts when I'm pulling 16-hour days shooting. But a mutual friend of Lee's and my own said, read this and turn it over. And I read it. And look, for me, reading scripts personally is a drag. I hate it.
Yeah.
And it's rare that you read a script, all the slug lines, top to bottom,
yeah.
and you read it like that. And that's exactly what I did with the script, and immediately I was like, must know more, who is this director? And I think we kind of just started circling each other, and we're on a phone call probably within hours after that.
Yeah, actually, you know, we had met once before. Remember that night we went to that terrible Hollywood club?
Yes.
And it was It was our mutual friend, it was like Ben McKenzie. Yes. And it was this really bad place that we were all sitting there eating at.
We're not supposed to talk about
it. We're not supposed to talk. That was the only time I had met you before that phone call.
But in regards to the audition process, well, you know, I guess you could say Lee offered this opportunity to me. I think we both knew, though, we could not arrive on the day and find out what we wanted to do.
Sure.
Right.
So, and for me, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, in my breakdown, under my name, audition only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are offer only, but I personally don't. I wouldn't know what to do with that, especially.
Really, that is fascinating.
You do not hear that a lot.
but never truly, heard that. I think I wanted to make sure we were on the same page, and Lee, of course, did too. And so we started to audition this man and this entity. And so I would send, with the months leading up to pre-pro, I would send him videos of just taking a bite of an apple as Gray, taking a bite of an apple as Stem, and. And throwing the apple, drinking, all the pedestrian kind of movements that would get us in the right element. Because I think the one thing we knew we didn't want was we wanted more bamboo than brick. And I think we started to kind of massage the idea, audition, if you will, the ideas afar, because you were in Australia and I was in LA. So.
I can tell you I got excited when you threw the apple. I remember you were biting it, and there was a video he sent me of him eating an apple, and then he threw it, and the throw, I was like, oh, there it is.
Oh, that's so cool.
So then I was like that's... Yeah,
was there something in the immediate conversations, though, that Logan brought to the table where you're like, okay, yep, this is it?
Well, first of all, he just got it, and so I could tell he understood the movie, but then that was when we spoke on the phone. And then when he came over to my house and we chatted in my kitchen, he had all these thoughts about the script, which is very standard for an actor.
Sure.
But his thoughts were awesome. They were really making the film better. And it's like, that was a moment where I was like, this is the right choice, because not only does he get it, but he can see where it could be better in little ways. And it's like, it's a gift, because that's what I feel like, that's what great actors do that doesn't get talked about enough, is that they become writers on the film.
Yeah.
They add. Even if they're not writing dialogue, they change the script and they change dialogue through their suggestions and their ideas.
And I was going to ask you, now this is your second movie you directed, but of course you've been heavily involved in many. Mm-hmm. And in all the films I've directed, I want my actors to kind of be contributors. And one, it's because I'm like, I'm not that great, you know, so you want to hear everyone else's ideas. But then two, you know, it's nice to have that collaborative environment. I feel, was it like that with you on this movie, with everybody else, like Betty Gabriel, like you enjoy the collaborative process of it as a director?
I totally do. I mean, the last thing you want
about your script or your dialogue or anything.
No, I mean, I definitely have a clear idea of what I want to do. So if I feel someone's deviating off the path, I might chat to them about it. But I definitely don't have an ego. And with the crew as well, I encourage everyone to make suggestions.
Absolutely.
And they just make it better. I mean, the last thing you want are people who are ambivalent, whether they're an actor or a crew member. If you see someone just going through the motions, it kills you, because it's, as you know, it's like your baby, and you want everyone to care as much as you do. So I definitely encourage everyone, and I probably had the closest relationship with Logan in terms of ideas, but Betty and Harrison and Mel, all the other actors, all of them, they're all intelligent actors. They all had really clear ideas about how something should be said in relation to their character in our rehearsals. And every one of those suggestions, 98% of them were right on.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be foolish to block that. As a director, you'd be crazy.
Now, Logan basically plays two characters in this film. As an actor, you're like two different characters. And you have your human version and your STEM version. And I don't want to give too much away. I tell people, don't watch the trailers for this. No, just go.
Because
I didn't watch the trailer. For some reason, I don't know why. There was no reason at all why.
Right.
I just decided not to. And I was just... It was even cooler.
It's a rare thing today, isn't it?
Because
usually, with the internet helping, you go into a movie having seen 10 teasers, 4 trailers, 3 behind the scenes.
One of my best friends reviews trailers for the New York Times. Trailers! for the New York Times. Like, that's what it's gotten to. That's the point we're at.
There's trailers for trailers.
Yeah, right. It's crazy. Well,
the funniest one is YouTube videos of people watching
reacting. They react to it. Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, that's insane.
It's insane. Yeah, I can't even follow all of it anymore. Was there like, were you more excited to play one character than another? Like, did you get more amped on the days where you get to play STEM, or did you get more amped when you got to do the human, you know, side of the character? Well, or was it a good balance? You're like, I was good on both days.
Well, when it comes to shooting a movie within such a small territory, you're usually doing all of it some point in the day.
Yeah.
We would shoot some scenes as Gray the same day that we'd shoot with STEM attached. And actually, the three characters, because... you know, there's also Gray in, you know,
Gray still. In STEM, yeah.
Well, no, there's the quadriplegic.
Yeah.
Gray, which is a whole different story and a whole different experience. And I can tell you it was nice. What I could say, it was nice to get out of that energy of sitting still as a quadriplegic. A, because I had worked with a guy who was really intimate and allowed me into his experience. And I, you know, it was very hard actually kind of to hold the hands in a way that I felt was right, but...
I never thought about how painful that would be.
Cramping.
The way you are holding your hands, that's quite... To hold, that's a stress position.
That was one of the harder things to do, is to give that silhouette its justice, its duty. And so I would say getting out of the chair was, while it was... there was an exhale to it, there was also a real sense of duty to do it right. And so I worked with this guy in that too. But, you know, you do it all in within one day.
It's a very physical part. As an actor, very physical. And I don't mean just because there's action scenes. It's everything about your character is physical movements.
Well, and even, you know, and even Gray, you know, his silhouette, his posture is a choice. And something Lee and I realized quickly, like, he actually sets us up to win. If we get him hunched over a car and you feel his bad posture when STEM takes over and is upright, that's just something... we hope you take for granted in a way, and it's subconscious in its juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. Right, because this movie doesn't work unless you figure out how to do the movements as STEM, as Gray, and, you know, I know you act, Lee acts as well, and I've acted a lot, and I don't think I could do this role. I really don't. I look, there is so much detail and, like, to me, this is just insane how you pulled this off. As an actor, I can't wrap my mind around how you pulled off so many different aspects of this character at one time. I was looking at it from an actor's point of view. And
yeah,
like,
it's... No, I'm with you.
Did it blow your mind?
It did. I can't overstate how much Logan brought to the film. But in hindsight, I realize how much faith, how much blind faith. I think a large part of a movie is just... closing your eyes and jumping off the cliff and being like, there's a net, right?
Yeah.
and trusting that your friend set up the net earlier. It's so I think I would come and visit Logan and I would see him working, and I kind of compartmentalized it, like, he's got this, and just had total faith. And it wasn't until you see the footage in the editing room you realize how much, because on a film set you're standing back from it. You know, I wasn't a foot away from Logan, I was behind a monitor over there. And sometimes I can't see all the detail of what he's doing. And I've had that experience before. Like, I remember doing a film a few years ago, The Mule, which was like a little Aussie crime thriller. And we were lucky enough to have Hugo Weaving, who's just a genius actor.
Great actor.
And I remember on the set thinking, I'm looking at this little monitor and I'm thinking, he's not really doing much. It's very minimal. And then you see it on a screen. And oh my God. Like, he was doing so much. Yeah. He's such a great screen actor. And that, it was the same for Logan. I was like, whoa, like, I didn't even notice on the day your little, like, some of your little moves where STEM would lead. I guess my mind was on a million different things and I wasn't picking it up. And then you get in the room and it's like, oh, thank God for these details.
And there's no cheating in the editing room in this movie. This isn't an MTV Michael Bay-styled edit where it's fast cut, cut, cut. Like, that's how you know Logan's good in this. It's on him.
Yeah, like, there was no stuntmen. It's like, can you guys learn the fights? I didn't want to have, you know, you see those fight scenes in some modern films where they're so cutty, for lack of a better word, that you're not sure about the geography of the fight.
Right.
Like, wait, who's punching who? I just wanted to point a camera at people and watch them do something.
He did. And I think it's really apparent in that really tight space, but it works really well in the house. The first, I don't want to spoil too much, but the first scene where you're in a fight scene, we'll just say what it is with that. And but you're in this apartment, and yeah. It's really close quarters.
Yeah.
But you keep it on pretty much like a medium and a long shot the whole time. Like, you see a lot of what's going on.
Yeah.
There's no, like, close-ups that are like, you know, you can't tell what's going on. That has to take a lot of choreography and skill, right, as an actor to pull off those scenes?
Yeah, well, again, it's all about the safety net. You get Lee got the best, and so I had a man named Darren Inkster, who's an old Cirque du Soleil cat, who works really in not just the movement but neutralizing me. We had one of the best stunt teams I've ever worked on. Certainly one of the best stunt teams in Hollywood. Chris Anderson and his crew. Chris Weir was my quote unquote double, but Chris Weir and Chris Anderson were the first to say, "You're doing this," and they really packed in a lot of strength and purpose into me and gave me a lot of support. And so, you know, when you're out there, I will say that it was one of the only times that I would race with Darren to the monitors, and not to see how good I am, but to make sure that, because the first person when I'm up off the ground after we call cut, even before Lee, would be Darren, and he'd be like, left hand, so weak, it breaks it down. You know, you have to, and he was on me, and I loved that about him. He was relentless about keeping that silhouette head to toe active.
Wow.
And never lazy, because if one hand is just like that and the other hand's like that, that neutral mm-hmm. position, it breaks it down, and so we were rigorous about everything. And it even, you know, even like my nails, I had grown, I'm a nail biter, but I grew my nails out because quadriplegic just simply doesn't bite
his
nails.
You can't bite his nails.
So I was hyper aware of my body, and it started from reading the script. It wasn't, Lee wrote a character and gave me an opportunity that will never present itself to me again. And I'm a guy from the theater, and this is what I think actors yearn for.
Tisch guy, right?
I'm NYU. I read acting. And you know,
I remember
most of
you saying you never usually go to the monitor on movies because you don't want to be in your head.
Yeah.
But you were doing it on this movie just to watch your body and make sure, you know, you're just doing something you would never normally do.
I mean, you've done action movies, but is there still like a newness or something like where you're a little more like protective about doing movies like this than say a Neil LaBute play, because you know it's dialogue and you're used to it and that's your training, but like you do action movies and you're kind of like sensitive about, like when you said you run right back to the monitor, you're like, this is something that's a little more of a risk even for you, would you say?
No doubt, if we're gonna do it right.
Yeah.
Like when I read the script, the first emotion was fear.
Yeah,
I can't do this. I don't want to do this. This is crazy because I'm not being asked.
That's how I feel watching you in this. No. I'm like, I'd never do this.
But truly, you read a script and immediately you think you're about your bust. What do they want out of this? That's all they really care about. And even in action films, that's really all they care about. They need to go find the guy who has the same this as you, so he can do the fight and it can get cutty, as Lee said, in case you suck.
Yeah, it's like everything from here down.
Yeah, right.
Stuntmen will take care of that.
They'll take
you
care
just
of
give
that.
Us you just give us the close up of
that's right.
whatever.
And so, you know, even like jumping down two flights of steps, you know, that was the stunt team and Lee saying, Lee holding the producers back, and the stunt team saying, "You got this."
Yeah.
The producer, Kylie Dufresne, one of the producers, took me aside and was like, "You cannot throw Logan off that stairwell, even with a rig attached to him." And I was like, "No, he can do it." and then Logan, to his credit, is like, "Okay, I got it," in his quiet way. And Chris Anderson's there, as usual, like, "Ah, oh, you'll be right." You know, the wink, you know, it gives you that wink, that Chris Anderson wink, like, "He got it."
Yeah.
You put a lot of trust in... Logan mentions Chris and his team a lot, but they empower you to think that things are possible. You never hear no. Never. You say, "Can we I'm like, can we have a scene where he falls down and as he's falling, he does this, that, or the other? Some people might go, oh, it sounds difficult. Those guys are always like, oh, yeah. You know, so you feel confident.
Yeah, it's always a, let me find a way with those guys. A lot of times you get people that are like, well, and it was always a possibility. You know?
Yeah, everything was possible. Yeah.
So we got one big piece down. We got Logan's performance. Okay, that's very important. Now, you talk about the script, also very important, super detailed. Like, I didn't get to read the script, but I'm imagining what I'm seeing on screen pretty much what the script was, right? You could say as an actor, you'd say that was pretty accurate portrayal. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the script's great. So, let me get to what's the biggest other piece of this movie, I feel, is the production design. Mm. Is like, dude, how'd you pull this off on a butt? Like, I feel like I'm watching Blade Runner. Like, it's that quality level, right? Like, did it even blow your mind as an actor, the production design on this? And you're like, wait, how much does this movie cost?
It's interesting because you didn't see it. Logan didn't see it till South by Southwest.
Really?
I didn't let him. There were plenty of opportunities. I could have shown him the film as a work in progress, but I didn't want to. So I guess when you saw it, you saw some of the CG and some of the production design in widescreen for the first time.
Completely. And to tell you the truth, that was always Lee's plan, you know, with Felicity. Lee can definitely talk better about. But when you're doing it, you're kind of thrown in. You understand this, and even when you're on a stage, it's a stage.
Yeah.
And, but I don't think I really understood the forest.
Right.
I saw the trees, and the trees look great. That was great. But you never know how lush that forest is going to look until you see it. And I was blown away by Lee and Felicity.
But I mean, it's just so detailed. The cars of the future, I feel like that's the immediate future. Like, right. The houses of the future, I feel like that's the immediate future. You don't even know this is in the fucking future until, right. Like, 2-3 minutes into this movie, until his wife comes home. Your wife comes home, and then we're like, oh, fuck, we're in the future. Like, you don't even know.
You start the movie in Gray's world.
Yeah.
And his world is a little analog.
And total believable. He's like, he's a mechanic. He's in his garage working on the car.
Yep.
You're like, okay, this is cool. And then his wife comes up, and my first reaction, because I didn't see the trailers, was, what the fuck? Like, she's driving some space car. And I go, oh, it's going to be that kind of movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, I was super into it. I'm like, all right.
I always wanted to start the film that way. I thought it'd be interesting to open a movie and you think, okay, what am I, in the 70s?
Yeah, right.
And the garage door opens and it's like drones and automated cars. And it was important to the story because you realize the metaphor is that he stays in this bubble. That's where he's safe. And then when he steps out into the modern world, he's a little hunched over, or he's a little more timid about it. And so, yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. Felicity Abbott was the production designer.
Killer job.
She did a great job. I really liked her resume, but one of the things I like best about it is she'd never done a sci-fi movie before. She hadn't done a genre film before, a horror film of anything. She had done, like, period dramas and costume dramas in Australia. And so I knew... excuse me, I knew that she would come at it through a different lens. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want the sci-fi movie beats that you'd seen before. And she had this great idea of, like, thinking that the tech should be imitating the natural world. And we started talking about that, about using, instead of using chrome and steel and a lot of these, you know, quote-unquote futuristic materials, she wanted to use wood. And she wanted trees and plants, and she felt that the wood should hide the tech, which is thematically correct because you have a movie about a piece of tech wanting to be organic. So all the tech in the movie is like that. And so everything came out of conversations with her. We talked about the city. Instead of going for the dystopian, neon-lit, rain-soaked Akira city, we wanted to go for living roofs and solar panels and almost a utopian version of the near future. And you find the dystopia within that. Because, as we know...
You pulled that off. That's exactly how it comes off.
Yeah, any utopian mask hides a darker truth. You know, if I cut to a shot of the city and the rain's pouring down and the pollution is coming in, we already know things are bad. But in this world, things are supposed to be better. That's what the tech is supposed to do. And it's only when you dig into it... I wanted to drill down into this world and find and show all facets of the society. So you see a suburban home.
Yep.
You see the homeless.
And the city.
You see the super rich. You see the city. you sort of see all the levels.
I agree. Like that's a functioning what, that was world. What was awesome. The detail. Like, you had a whole world. It was like SimCity you were playing or right. something, you know?
That should, it should be a world you could plug different stories into. And yeah. I wanted to, as Gray goes on his journey and he goes into the abyss, he finds the people who reject tech and they live off the grid. Then he finds the people who steal power, the hackers. There's an economic disparity in access to this tech.
Yeah.
So there's a whole breed of hackers who just steal it. They hook up to the city power grid.
And, well, I think another reason this film works so well, and it goes back to the script, is, yeah, it's a dystopian movie, but I feel like the best dystopian kind of movies are the ones that are personal. The ones that are about personal things, not the world is going to end.
Right. Like, if an alien race is coming to wipe out New York City, that's different than, say, in the case of the Terminator, one woman's life is at stake.
Right.
But you're told that this woman's life will affect everything, and so you buy into that, and it's a tense movie.
Well, a great example I gave after the movie was, because we were talking about Logan's performance, I go, and he was in Spider-Man Homecoming. And I go, the reason I love Spider-Man Homecoming, but I didn't really care for the Avengers movies, I did like the new one, but the former ones was, well, the former ones are all about New York's gonna, you know, it's the end of the world. Right. It's the end of the world. But Spider-Man Homecoming, it's about something. It's about, like, people. It's, you know,
yeah, they really shrunk it down to just be about a couple of dudes, yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you guys sitting down with me. I could talk to you for another half hour, but they're giving me the signal. And,
no, I appreciate it.
I love this movie.
I love your
I hope it's a huge success. Dude, I hope it's a huge success. I don't know how you would turn it into more, but maybe you have some ideas if it's a success or what.
I don't know. I like, what did you say before? Vehicle of... What was it?
Oh, what was that? Vehicle of violence.
Upgrade 2, vehicle of violence.
I do kind
of
like
Son of STEM also.
Son of STEM. STEM 2.0 obviously is a big one.
Well, I want to thank you guys very
Cheers,
much.
Cheers. Thank you. Thanks you, for Lee, having
thanks
us.
Thanks,
Logan.
Thank
Go
you.
Go Blackhawks.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
That was my interview with Logan Marshall Green and Lee Wannell. I wanted to once again talk about just how great of a movie Upgrade was. It was above and beyond anything I expected it to be. And that doesn't take away anything from Lee, who's done some incredible work with Insidious and with the Saw franchise. I just thought, boy, this was a movie that was completely unexpected. By the way, if you care about that sort of thing, the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes is 86% for this thing. The average rating, 7.1 out of 10. There are 84 reviews. 72 of them are considered fresh. The audience score is a 4.1 out of 5. 88% liked it. Over 1,000 user ratings there. So obviously everybody's liking this movie. And it's a movie that you should definitely check out from Blumhouse Productions. Blumhouse continues to just do original gripping work every chance they get. I love Blumhouse, man. Dude, I'm not even a huge horror person. I like horror. I don't dislike horror, but, and this is kind of a sci-fi fantasy action adventure, but also horror. But yeah, man, Blumhouse, if they put something out nowadays, I'm watching it. So totally into it, loved it. Check out Upgrade. It's in theaters now. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in theaters that you guys should, like, you have to see. Hereditary's coming out, and I hear that's amazing, but I haven't seen it yet. What else is out? I've seen everything. I recommend you see Solo. I love Solo. I had a blast with Solo. I think way too many people are going into these movies with preconceived notions, their opinions already made up for them, and you're not just enjoying the movie as a movie. I think, in fairness to my friend Bruce Fretz and other people who said, I'm done with superhero movies, I'm done with Star Wars movies, the reason they're saying that they don't like these new movies is they've already gone into these movies knowing they're not going to like them. And Look, I want more original movies than ever before as well. And I'd like more original movies. And do we have too many Star Wars movies? Do we have too many superhero movies? Maybe. But is 4 a year, 5 a year too many? I don't know. But maybe. Let's say maybe, right? My thing is this, though. It doesn't make me go into the movie automatically. I'm not going to like the movie. And until they start making really bad Star Wars and superhero movies, which they have not done, I can't be a part of that crowd that says we need to get rid of Star Wars or superheroes. I just, for me, it's not enough to say no. Try and think if there's anything else. I saw A Kid Like Jake. A Kid Like Jake's it's a good little movie, and that's the best way to sum it up. Claire Danes gives a great performance. So you could give that a check if you'd like. You check that out if you'd like. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I would recommend right now. Avengers, everyone's seen, so it doesn't matter what I say about it, which, by the way, I loved it. Let's see here. Anything else to see? What's coming out? We know Jurassic World's coming out, but anyways, oh, Deadpool 2. I like Deadpool 2 a lot. I did not like it as much as Solo. I also did not like it as much as its first film, Deadpool. To be honest with you, I don't think about Deadpool 2 that often. I'm still thinking about Solo, and I'm still thinking about Avengers. So yeah. Oh, please go see the book club. I love the book club. I had a blast with the book club. I hope it's still making money. Breaking In, I saw with Gabrielle Union. She's great. Movie's average, if even average. I may be nice about it. You know what kind of swept me off my feet by surprise was Overboard. I didn't love it, but I ended up not liking it. I liked it enough. Overboard was a cute little movie, man. It really was. And especially compared to everything else that's out right now, I'm kind of shocked how much I liked Overboard. Yeah, but other than that, everything else that's out right now, you could probably take a pass on. And by the way, I just wanted to say again, I don't know why the reviews were great. I don't know why the audience reviews were so great. Blockers, I thought, was one of the funniest movies of the year. And I'm not understanding this backlash online from the audience. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm missing on that. But yeah, I loved Blockers. So if you get a chance, check that out. I want to thank Lee Wannell. You can see his films, the Insidious films, all the Saw films. But you can see his new film, Upgrade, in theaters now. And Lee, thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing something so unique and so cool to the screen. It was a joy to watch. And Logan Marshall Green, just a star in the making and been in the making for 10 plus years. And I think this is your breakout, man. And I love the hell out of it. And, man, you guys are two talented, talented dudes. And hopefully we're going to have some more, you know, in-person interviews coming up on the Matthew Aaron Show. Pat's doing some booking. And this is our L.A. summer on the Matthew Aaron Show. So right now I would say in order, check out Upgrade, check out Solo, because it doesn't need as much money as Upgrade. Well, rewind on that. The bomb that everyone's saying Solo is, maybe it does need your money. So go see Upgrade, go see Solo, go see Avengers, go see Blockers if you still can. If you're looking for something cute, Overboard's a cute little movie, go see. But yeah, those are my picks right now, and thank you to everyone for coming on the show, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Thank you.